Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's October 24th of 2022. I'm your host, Claire Purnell. Coming up on today's program, the Colorado State Board of Education is in the process of setting new K-12 curriculum standards for the next several years, while implementing changes mandated by recent legislation. And CityCast Denver brings us an overview of the different booze measures on Colorado ballots. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown. After that, it's a public affair with the Community Foundation of Boulder County. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning, but first, the headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Louisville police fatally shot a 57-year-old man early Sunday morning while responding to a domestic violence call. Officers say they shot the man after he advanced towards them with a large bloody butcher knife while inside a home in eastern Louisville. According to the department's press release, the Boulder County Investigation Team and the Boulder District Attorney's Office will investigate the shooting. The Louisville Police Department has placed the three involved officers on administrative leave. The department has released no other information on the incident. Individuals affected by domestic violence can seek help through the National Domestic Violence Center, as well as the services through the Colorado Crisis Hotline at 1-844-493-8255. Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman has presented a plan to revise how the city provides support to the homeless population. KGNU's Christian Gerbe has more.
The main element of Mayor Kaufman's proposal calls for a centralized homeless services campus instead of multiple offices spread out throughout the city. The Aurora Sentinel reports Kaufman took inspiration for the campus from institutions in San Antonio and Houston, Texas, that have proven effective in providing and coordinating services. The city also plans to offer numerous services to homeless individuals, including employment opportunities, better conditions for transitional housing, case management, and more. The city also plans to launch a public education campaign to garner support for the program. The Aurora City Council is working with Kaufman to further develop the plan and are adding elements to it, including the condition that the campus can be built if it is supported by a private, nonprofit organization. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
Groups in Colorado are scrambling to get a piece of funding from a new U.S. Department of Energy $7 billion hydrogen hub grant. KGNU's Jack Armstrong reports.
Applicants have until November 7th to submit their applications to the Department of Energy for hydrogen hub concept plans. The Department of Energy describes a hydrogen hub as a center to produce, store, and use hydrogen gas, which is a cleaner form of energy used in place of fossil fuels. The department announced funding for its hydrogen power initiative in September. $7 billion are available through the bipartisan infrastructure law passed last year. Brian Wilson, the director of Rocky Mountain Alliance for Next Generation Energy and the professor of mechanical engineering at Colorado State University, told Colorado Newsline that states will be vying for hydrogen hubs to bring in economic development and achieve climate goals. The Rocky Mountain Alliance for Next Generation Energy is giving technical support to the effort of creating the Western Interstate Hydrogen Hub, which includes Colorado as a leader, along with New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. Colorado's air quality has recently been demoted to severe nonattainment along the Front Range, and that has a direct influence in our state's support for diverse ways of utilizing clean energy. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
Boulder County officials are urging residents to contact the Denver Regional Council of Governments, or Dr. COG, to support the creation of an east-west starter transit service along Colorado Highway 7 between Boulder and Brighton. The county says a $6.5 million grant from Dr. COG would cover bus service for 2 years and include 10 stops along the route that would also serve the communities of Lafayette, Erie, Broomfield, and Thornton. According to county officials, the service would begin in 2026 with weekday operations and then ramp up to 30-minute intervals all day, 7 days a week in 2027. The county says the funding would precede the bus rapid transit service along the corridor that will take advantage of lanes, stations, and other improvements currently in the works or under construction along the corridor. Improvements would include upgraded walking and bicycling facilities. Denver residents can give public feedback tonight as city leaders consider Mayor Michael Hancock's $1.66 billion budget for 2023. The City Council will begin the public hearing today at 5 p.m. Among budget priorities, the mayor is calling for a $43 million increase for police and public safety. According to the Denver Gazette, city leaders identified crime rates, homelessness, and a lack of affordable housing as focus areas during their council budget retreat. Residents can sign up to speak between 3 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. today and can attend the meeting by Zoom or in person at the council chambers. Colorado's flu season is already off to a rough start this year. According to a new report, 4 adults and close to 100 children have been hospitalized in Colorado since the start of October for respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, which is a higher than usual rate for this time of year. The increase in rates of seasonal respiratory viruses comes amid loosened COVID-19 prevention efforts like masking that partially curbed viruses over the last few years. Dr. Kevin Massagar, an infectious disease specialist at the Children's Hospital in Colorado, told the Denver Post the number of children needing care for respiratory viruses started rising over the summer, which he said is earlier than expected and not a good sign for the rest of the flu season. Today's weather includes a freeze warning in effect until 9 a.m. this morning. According to the National Weather Service, winds will be gusty today and will increase tonight as a mountain wave develops. Gusts could reach as high as 55 miles per hour along the northern foothills and mountains of Boulder and Larimer counties. Other than wind, skies will be mostly sunny with highs in the upper 40s, low 50s, and tonight will be mostly clear with lows ranging from 31 degrees for Fort Collins to 35 degrees for Denver. The current temperature in Boulder is 32 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Claire Purnell. The Colorado State Board of Education is in the process of revising and setting K-12 curriculum standards for the next several years. This involves the implementation of three separate pieces of legislation. HB 21-1103 requires resources to improve media literacy. SB 21-067 aims to overhaul civics instruction in order to better the understanding of how the three branches of government operate and how laws come into being. Then there's a 2019 law that calls on the State Board of Education to include more history of underrepresented groups and demographics in social studies standards. The spirit of HB 19-1192 would include more instruction on the history and culture of Native Americans, Latinos, African Americans, Asian Americans, religious minorities, and lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals. Implementing the legislation has encountered friction. Kelly Drumright of KGNU's Outsources Collective spoke with scientist and local community activist Neil Fishman about how the implementation of the law has been moving through the Board of Education's process.
Part of the legislation required that a commission would be formed that would be the reviewing body and making recommendations to the State Board of Education. And that reviewing body, the membership of that contained many of the underrepresented groups that were the focus of this piece of legislation. So it was being developed by and performed by people from underrepresented communities. So that group came forward with a host of recommendations to the existing social studies curriculum that would better suit the need for the representation of underrepresented communities in the curriculum. In turn, then, the Board of Education had a review committee that would review those recommendations. And that review committee was composed of educators and a couple of parents and people who had volunteered to be on this committee. And it's not just for this particular process. That committee is present for other kinds of things like this as well. And so they reviewed the recommendations in early this year. That was an ongoing process. And then they made their revisions known to the State Board of Education and to the public after that. And it was that review committee that effectively eviscerated much of the mention of underrepresented communities from the earlier commission's list of recommendations. And so the topic at hand is how to go forward with the revisions and whether or not the State Board of Education would vote in the revised version of the recommendations or whether they would want to do something else.
One local organization that is pushing back on the attempt to prevent the implementation of more inclusive social studies standards is Out Boulder County. The organization will host a conversation with Boulder Valley School District Superintendent Rob Anderson this Thursday at 6:30 p.m. In tonight's Outsources program, host Kelly Drumright also speaks with Out Boulder County's Executive Director, Marty Moore.
There's a concerted effort to remove LGBT people from any protections in this country. I have every belief that there's a national movement that is focused on Colorado because we're such a great state and we're a purple state. So first in February, when it was brought to my attention, they were talking about removing LGBTQ, LGBT, I think is the language in the bill, mentions anywhere in it. So the first attack was on the community that Neil and I serve and are members of. And that fear, I think, this becomes a political decision. These are not decisions about what serves students well. We are not having that conversation. That conversation has been removed, which is so unfortunate. And we're not talking about standards. We're not talking about learning. And so here we are in a nation where trans kids and their family are moving to Colorado because in the state of Florida or the state of Texas, it's not safe. And then they're coming here because Colorado is known as a great place to raise your kids. And then we're facing this. I mean, is there nowhere safe? And you talk about bullying numbers. These conversations impact youth. And so every one of these conversations needs to talk about the validity of identities and the importance of teaching that are inclusive of those identities.
So one of the main critiques, just nationally, is that LGBTQ content is not, quote unquote, age appropriate for fourth grade and below. How would you respond to this idea that that content is not age appropriate for fourth grade and below?
It's ludicrous, okay? As a lesbian who, with a partner, raised kids, and who my kid always had two moms, and you go to kindergarten, and you don't know exactly what the kid, like, we're normal, right? We're a happy, loving family. We show up at kindergarten, we're the only people, only lesbians there, and my kid's got the moms. By first grade, she already felt like she didn't fit. Right. And so we had to switch schools, find another school where somebody had already blazed a trail. And we weren't talking about sex. Now, this is where the conflation happens. If you mention lesbian, all of a sudden we're having a conversation about sex. Well, actually, no, we're not.
Then by that logic, if you talk about your quote unquote regular nuclear family with a cisgender man, cisgender woman, and 2.2 kids or whatever, then you're also talking about sex.
You would think, but that's not true, right?
That really is at the heart of it. There is a concern on the part of some people that any mention of anything going down this path is centered on sex education, and this is exactly not what we were talking about. But I want to speak to this particular topic directly as it pertains to the resolution that the Boulder Valley School District Board voted on, because they have, an excellent clause in that resolution that speaks exactly to this issue. And it reads as follows. Whereas the BVSD board recognizes that including historically marginalized groups in standards and curriculum does not make the instruction or content a controversial subject or part of comprehensive human sexuality education under state law subject to notice and waiver requirements. Before they voted on this, they brought this particular matter up and they made it clear that what we are talking about, and if you look at the original recommendations coming forward to the State Board of Education on the social studies curriculum, it was not about sex ed. It was never about sex ed. It's about inclusion. It's about recognizing and celebrating diversity. And there's no, it has no bearing on sex ed. And they know that if the conversation is going to be about sex ed, that the parents need to be notified and that there's an opt-out option for those parents. This is not that, period, end of discussion. It just is about inclusion, the role of marginalized groups in the history of Colorado. Nothing about that speaks to sex ed.
That was KGNU's Kelly Drumright speaking with Out Boulder County Executive Director Marty Moore and community activist Neil Fishman. The Colorado State Board of Education may vote on the new social studies standards as early as next month's two-day meeting, November 10th and 11th. You can hear the full conversation tonight on Outsources at 6:30 p.m. here on KGNU. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Claire Purnell. We'll be right back. The future of the neighborhood liquor store is at stake in next month's election, at least if you listen to owners of neighborhood liquor stores. There are three big state ballot measures, each with major implications for alcohol drinkers and sellers alike. But what would these initiatives actually change? Why is DoorDash spending so much money supporting them? And why are those mom-and-pop shops so worried? CityCast Denver host Bree Davies sits down with Colorado Sun politics reporter Jesse Paul to break down all the boos on your ballot.
So we've got three initiatives on the ballot this time around that are all related to alcohol sales. And I would love if we could just do sort of a quick and dirty breakdown of each one of those. Can you tell me about Proposition 124?
Sure. So I kind of call this the Total Wine Initiative. So what it would do is let liquor retailers open more stores in Colorado. So right now they're only limited to three. In a few years, they'll be able to open four. But what this would do is immediately let them open more stores, and then by 2037, open an unlimited number of stores. And this is pretty much solely being pushed for by Total Wine and More, the big national chain, and the two owners, one of who's a United States representative. And they've spent, you know, $7, $8 million to try and get this thing passed.
And then we have Proposition 125.
Right. So what this would do is let grocery stores and convenience stores, basically anywhere you can buy full-strength beer right now, start selling wine in March of next year. So really quickly. And this is being pushed by the people who you might expect to be pushing it. The grocery stores are spending tons of money to put this on the ballot. You've probably seen their ads if you watch TV.
So that adults have the convenience of buying wine in a grocery store without making extra stops and adding to our to-do list.
And then finally, we have Proposition 126, which deals with to-go drinks, right?
Right. And also deals with third-party delivery services. So I guess I'll start there. So if you've ever ordered liquor from a liquor store on an app, the liquor store itself actually has to drive you the liquor. They can't, you know, do it through Uber Eats or Instacart or Grubhub or whatever your service is. And that's because Colorado law requires the actual retailer to do that delivery service. And so, as you can imagine, there's a lot of retailers who don't have, you know, that capability or the staff. You got to train people up to do it. It's not just as easy as, you know, putting someone in a car and sending them out to drop it off to you. So this is also backed by the grocery stores, but it's also backed by, like, again, Instacart, DoorDash, those delivery services. And then secondarily, this measure would also let restaurants sell to-go alcohol in perpetuity. Because right now, you know, the pandemic allowance, letting people deliver those to-go margaritas that everybody loved, runs out in July 2025. And this would just keep it going indefinitely. And the Colorado Restaurant Association is really excited about this. They're one of the supporters of the measure. And again, this is also funded by the grocery stores and the Instacarts and the DoorDashes of the world. A lot of corporate money coming in for all three of these measures.
That was sort of my next question, was like, who's financially supporting these measures? And like you said, you know, like a huge liquor store chain is. Our grocery store situation here is, I mean, those are big corporations. What does that tell us about these initiatives?
Yeah, and this is like something we focus on really closely at the Sun, because the money can tell you, you know, pretty much everything you need to know about any kind of political race. And this one, you know, if you didn't know where the money was coming from for these things, you might think that these are initiatives that are being pushed for by small independent liquor retailers who on the surface might look like they might benefit from some of these things, or, you know, your mom and pop grocery store down the street. But that's really not the case. These are big corporations that are spending millions of dollars to try and pass these things this year in an effort really to increase their business, to do better business in Colorado. Liquor stores, you know, Total Wine, they want to be in every city in Colorado because they have their discount prices. And then you've got the grocery stores who would be more than happy to have you just buy your wine there than go next door to the neighborhood liquor store. And just, you know, the amount of money that we're seeing spent in these races, just for comparison, I mean, it's kind of rivaling the dollars that are being spent in, you know, the races for the governor and for congressional races in Colorado. It's just a ton of money.
Something that I find interesting, and I don't know, this maybe is kind of a dumb question, but these are citizen-led initiatives technically, right?
Right. And everyone who ever sees that should maybe have a little pause. So, I mean, just for background here, I mean, to get a statewide ballot initiative on the ballot this year, you needed to collect 125,000 signatures from voters in Colorado. And nobody can do that on their own. Nobody really tries to do that. The citizen-led initiative thing is kind of a misnomer. All these organizations pay signature gatherers to fan out across Colorado to collect signatures. And when they say that you need 125,000 valid voter signatures, that means you really got to turn in like 200,000 plus just to be sure that you're getting enough and people don't mess up, you know, the spelling of their names or the towns or eligibility or whatever. So this year, you know, just like every other industry, wages have gone up for signature gatherers. It costs more to gather signatures. And I heard, you know, people were gathering signatures for as little as $10 a signature and as much as like $35 a signature.
Holy
so that's
cow.
A ton of money. And, you know, millions of dollars get spent trying to collect these signatures just to put these things on the ballot in the first place.
But what I'm wondering is, we've got three measures targeting a specific industry. And if they all pass, would this mean some kind of a seismic shift in Colorado's alcohol policy?
Yeah, so people might remember a few years ago, there was the liquor wars in Colorado, and it went through the legislature. And that was where all of these kind of topics started swirling around to begin with. And, you know, if you've been around for more than 2 years in Colorado, you know that you weren't able to buy full-strength beer before. You had to buy the 3-2 beer. You had to drink twice as much to get, you know, as drunk. And
at the grocery store,
right.
You mean?
Right, and at 7-Elevens okay. And stores like that. You know, you could always buy the full-strength beer. But again, all of these policies kind of centering around the idea of trying to help mom-and-pop folks. So there was this grand compromise that was reached, and that grand compromise allowed for full-strength beer sales in grocery stores, and it opened the door in the future for wine sales in liquor-licensed drugstores and spirit sales in liquor-licensed drugstores in, you know, 10, 15 years from now. So this is kind of that all falling apart. And, you know, we're seeing all these millions of dollars by the corporations coming in and going around the legislature using the citizen initiative process, again, maybe a misnomer, to kind of rewrite these laws. This would be a huge sea change in the way that Coloradans buy their alcohol and the way that the, you know, state's entire liquor laws are set up.
So I'm thinking about, again, these measures as a whole. By themselves, or if they all pass together, could this really kind of like spell the end of the neighborhood liquor store?
If you talk to the neighborhood liquor store, they would say yes. I don't know if that's true. I will tell you, as like a personal consumer, I will always go to the neighborhood liquor store because it's just easier. Two blocks away for me to go buy a bottle of wine or a six pack, you know, as long as it's there, I'm gonna go there. But you know, I'm also willing to drive when I have a few minutes, 15 minutes away to Total Wine to get, you know, liquor that's a little bit cheaper. And I think all of these things will like have to play themselves out over time if all of these pass. And to be clear, like, I think there's a pretty good shot that they will. You know, money in politics makes a big difference. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for convenience here. And I think people probably would be happy to have some more options. You know, I think we'll just kind of have to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jesse Paul, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver Daily News podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Claire Purnell. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Jack Armstrong, Christian Gettybye, Alexis Kenyon, Kelly Drumright, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then a public affair with the Community Foundation of Boulder County. That's just after the news headlines from the BBC.